Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 3rd, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Update on stuff. So one of the things I wanted to talk about, well, first of all, check out my cool tie-dye shirt if you're watching on Facebook Live or YouTube. I can't resist when I go travel, I'm in the airport, and if they have sales on t-shirts, I sometimes grab one. So I grabbed this at Bradley a couple of years ago. Actually, at that time, I think I grabbed a couple more because I was going to see my girlfriends from out west, Francis and Stephanie, and I grabbed a couple Connecticut t-shirts for them as well. But it's a cool pastel tie-dye shirt that says Connecticut. I also have a couple of shirts that say Baltimore, because if you fly southwest to Sarasota, you generally have a layover. They don't have any direct flights from Bradley to Sarasota. So often they route you through BWI, and when you BWI is Boston Washington International. So you wind up having a layover in Baltimore. So I have a couple t-shirts from Baltimore as well. They go on sale. And my lucky mom for Mother's Day, she got a t-shirt from BWI. So that was kind of fun. Mine is sort of a salmon pink and hers is a beautiful turquoise or teal, somewhere between turquoise and teal, airport t-shirts. So I want to talk about that in terms of my spinal stenosis. It's not doing too bad, I must say. I had the epidural injection a few weeks ago, back in late April, and I think it was helpful. I feel like the nerve is gradually healing. I'm noticing that it's gradually bothering me less and less. And it's been, let's see, I had the surgery in September of 2025, and it is now, I'm recording this at the end of May, and you're going to be listening to it at the beginning of June. We're looking at how many months is that? October, November, December, January, March, April, May. We're talking 7 months. So maybe I was impatient to think that my nerve would be a whole lot better in 3 months. Because I had a patient who had her pain went completely away after her surgery. Mine didn't. I still had the nerve pain. My back was better. And I must say, when I had the last epidural injection, thanks to nice Dr. Kishawi, he gave me this nice injection. And I noticed immediately the next day that my back was a whole lot better. The nerve is still taking its time healing. But my actual back, even though my back isn't too bad, the soreness comes and goes, it improved. And I'm going to have another epidural injection in about a month from now. And I'm going to try to hold off on doing that, not doing that for a while afterwards, because I'm taking so many nice things to help rebuild. I'm doing nice PT exercises and yoga, and I'm trying to get back on the bike. I'm a little frustrated because I keep getting sidetracked from the bicycle. So I rode a fair bit when I was in Florida. I went to Florida the week of Mother's Day, and a couple of things happened there. One of them was I was determined to get myself into the Gulf as much as possible. And so I did that. So I was in the, I went into the Gulf, even if it was just for half an hour. And the cool thing about being at my mom's is the drive to the beach is 5 or 10 minutes. And in May, it's not season. And when it's not season, the beach isn't as crowded. That doesn't mean that nobody was there. There were plenty of people there. And there were plenty of people there that week because a lot of people came down for Mother's Day. But towards the end of the week, the people at the stores said, well, the Mother's Day crowd is gone. They came for the weekend, or they came till midweek. But I did run into people there who were visiting their moms for Mother's Day, which is very nice. And I like to go down for a week. I usually get there the day before Mother's Day. This year I went on Mother's Day because the day before was a very happy birthday celebration to my friend Diane Marion, who is a local beloved massage therapist and mamo and, you know, mother and grandmother to all, and great-grandmother as well. And it was her birthday celebration the day before Mother's Day on May 9th, Billy Joel's birthday. And also my friend Bill Harvey's birthday. Anyway, so I stayed to go to that party, and then I got up at 0:30 the next morning and got on a plane and went to Florida for Mother's Day. So I was there for Mother's Day, and then I stayed through the following Saturday. And so while I was there, I jumped in the Gulf as much as I could, and I also went into the pool. I think the Gulf was more helpful than the pool, although the pool was also helpful. I wonder what would happen if I had an ordinary chlorinated pool that I got into every day. And I could do that if I would get myself to the Mansfield Community Center, and I have not been doing that. And they have a hot tub there as well. But I'm not is there's a time issue with that. If I were retired, I would be more likely to go to the Mansfield Community Center because there's a time issue with getting myself there. So I really think that the being in the salt water, that there's a couple things that happen when you're in salt water. One of them is you have the minerals, and I think the minerals draw inflammatory compounds out through your skin to an extent. And the other thing is you are very buoyant. You're not as buoyant in a chlorinated pool, although you are. But you have a lot of healing minerals in the water, and you have the benefit of negative ions. And negative ions are what happens when molecules crash into each other, and they release negative ions. So the agitation of the water creates negative ions, and the movement of the air above the water has those ions coming into it, and you benefit from the air itself making negative ions above the water. So you get the negative ions, and they provide anti-inflammatory benefits as well. Plus there's the buoyancy, and while you're in the water, you can't stand still because the Gulf was a little bit active while I was there on various days, and there was actually enough. Going to the Gulf is not like going to the open ocean. Although going to the Gulf is also not like going to the Long Island Sound in Connecticut. So you do have some wave activity in the Gulf. And sometimes there's enough wave activity that you can actually spend time jumping waves. And that act of jumping waves, you can't help but move around a lot. So you're moving around a lot, getting negative ions, and getting your inflammatory compounds drawn out of you. And you're physically getting exercise. So the whole thing is a win-win-win. It's really good. And the great thing is, like I said, if you live where I live, we're in Mansfield. So it's a good 30 miles due south to get to the closest beach. And the closest beach to where I live is probably Niantic. And that's on the Sound. And the thing with the Long Island Sound in Connecticut, or the North Shore of Long Island if you're in New York, is there's very little wave activity because it's bound. I mean, you can see the North Shore of Long Island from the Connecticut shoreline. And so there's just not, it's bound. It's almost like it's a lake. There's not, you will get some wave activity there. I can attest to that because I did do the Niantic Bay Triathlon, and that day there were waves, but it's even calmer than the Gulf. So there's not a lot of jumping waves that you're going to be doing. It's certainly a little more active than a lake, but not much. And depending on the day as well. The other thing with the Long Island Sound is it's always going to be colder than the Gulf. And even in July, you may or may not want to get in for a long period of time. People do, but it doesn't get as warm. I mean, when it's May in Florida, you definitely want to be in the water. January in Florida, not so much, although people do it. People may throw on wetsuits, or some people just go in and grin and bear it, especially if they're from Eastern Europe. If they're Russian, Ukrainian, or Belarusian, they're in the water. Doesn't matter when. And hats off to them because they know something that we don't know. They know the benefits of bathing in mineral water or bathing in natural bodies of water. Because when I am in Venice, I see them and I'll say hello to some nice women and they won't often say hello back. And it's not because they're being stuck up. It's because they don't speak English. And then you hear them chatting with their friends and, oh my goodness, they're speaking either Russian. Usually it's either Russian. Well, it could be Russian, Ukrainian, or Belarusian. And So I try to chat with them if I can. Some of them speak a little English, and they're very nice once you manage to say da or nyet to them. Anyway, so they were very smartly in the water because they know that that joint pain and nerve pain are going to be much better if you get in bodies in natural bodies of water, especially salt water. So it's May in Connecticut, and we have been having crazy weather. I'm recording this on a Saturday, and it's rainy and icky today, and we're not even going to see 60 degrees. In fact, we're barely making it into the 50s today, and it's just we've just been having weather that's been going up and down. And one of my favorite bakers who comes to the farmer's market, poor thing, has a migraine, so shout out to her. I hope she feels better soon. And, you know, because this changes in the air pressure are just not working for people. So it's really cold here. So if I were to go to Niantic now, that would just not work. So what I decided to do, because the window of opportunity to get in the ocean or in the sound is short. And the other thing is, if you want to go to the open ocean, if you live where I live, the closest place you have to go is going to be westerly. You have to go to Rhode Island because Long Island ends near westerly. It's right up until Pawcatuck, and then you cross into Rhode Island, and then you have open ocean. And then you can actually get in the water, jump waves, if you can stand the temperature, depending what time you're going there. And so since I'm not going to be able to get to the actual ocean frequently, what I decided to do is get some Dead Sea Mineral Salt lotion. I haven't experimented as much as I'd like to yet with it, but it would be something I could do at home, and I could get the minerals onto my body, but I have to use it more. So I'm excited about trying that. And the other thing would be to get Dead Sea Mineral Salt baths and take those baths. You just take a bath. I mean, it's not the same as jumping around in the water, but it's, as we say in Yiddish, BVG, besser be gornished, which means better than nothing. So anyway, so I was very impressed with that. So I do recommend getting into natural bodies of water for joint pain, arthritis, nerve pain, what have you, for inflammation in general. The other thing that happened is, had this wonderful, relaxing trip. I came home. I got home late on a Saturday night, and the next day I had to I had to catch up. So I was very busy. I hit the ground running, and then I had to make a show and then go to work, and I had a very busy week. And starting Tuesday night into Wednesday, I felt like I had a little bit of a scratchy throat. And I'm like, oh, that's going to go away. It's probably just allergies. Well, the scratchy throat didn't go away for a good day or so. And then I got really congested and started to feel sick. And I'm like, ugh, I have a cold. And it's May, and I got a cold. I couldn't believe it. So in all likelihood, I caught the cold on the plane. And so I read some statistics. And the statistics say that a couple things. One is that if you sit in the aisle seat, which I tend to do, so I have access to the bathroom, I really prefer to sit by the window because it's nice and cozy and you get to look out the window. But then you have to ask people if you could go by them to go use the bathroom. So I tend to sit in the aisle. So if you sit in the aisle, and if there's somebody sick within three rows of you, you're much more likely, you have an 80% chance of catching whatever is going around in those three rows. If you sit in the window seat, it actually drops down to 30%. So I may consider sitting in window seats from now on, although I did book my flight for September and I booked the aisle seats again. So the other thing is I did wear a mask when I was on the plane, although I didn't have it on the whole time because you get to drink and you get to eat. So it didn't really help. And I got sick anyway. So that was disappointing because I had a cold in December. I thought that would carry me through the season, but it didn't. And it's very unusual for me to get a cold this time of year, but it must be something that my body hadn't seen. And there are definitely some weirdo colds and rhinoviruses going around that people's bodies haven't seen, and they keep mutating and not killing people. So they keep mutating and they keep spreading around. So that was no fun getting a summer cold. Now there's something that I found that's good for the immune system that I wish I had had when I first got sick. And I had gotten these lovely gummies from one of the companies when I went to the naturopathic conference. It's Promunel, I believe. So Promunel is this interesting stuff. It's a patented propolis extract made by a particular company, and it's used in dietary supplements and oral sprays to support the immune system. So propolis is made by bees. It's one of the things that bees make, and it's a resin. It's a sticky resin that bees make to protect the hive. And really, I could have just had some nice propolis throat spray. And I think I had some, and I wasn't using it a lot. But straight up propolis. And propolis is very popular in Brazil. So they're big believers in honey and propolis and stuff from bees. Anyway, so Promunel is an extract, a patented extract from propolis. And if you take it, it can dramatically ease cold and cough symptoms within a few days. And I wish I had had it at that time. And if you use it over 12 weeks, it reduces your chances of experiencing respiratory discomfort by like 30%. And it has this possible, really potent dynamic extraction process. So you can get it in capsules, you can get it in oral sprays, and I know you can get it in gummies. So there's definitely sprays that you can get, and I think I'm going to get myself a couple of these. I did order the gummies, and I don't need them as much now because I'm just getting over this, and I'm feeling so much better. One of the funny things that happens to me while I'm having a cold, I was still sick a week later, so I came down with the actual symptoms pretty much on a Wednesday. A week later, I still felt like I was sick. I was going to go for a nice bike ride because my father's birthday was a couple days ago, and to celebrate his 89th birthday, I was going to ride my bike on Route 89 in Mansfield, and I just did not feel up to it on Wednesday. And I had a lot of congestion and runny nose, and I felt like, and I had this thought in my head, am I ever going to be well again? One of the things that I need to remember and learn is when that thought pops into my head, it's coming into my head at a time when my immune system is really kicked in and fighting the virus, and I'm probably going to feel a lot better in the next couple of days. Well, guess what? On Thursday, I felt much better, although this cold had been kind of going up and down. But Thursday, I felt much better. Friday, I also felt much better. Now we're recording this on Saturday, and I continue to be much better. So that was my immune's last hurrah. It was kicking into gear and getting rid of the rest of the virus. And now I'm a lot better. Now I'm pretty confident that I'm no longer contagious. And again, I never stayed home. On the first couple of days that I felt sick, I worked, but I worked virtually. And my staff doesn't care if I'm there. They're not worried about catching it from me. The funny thing is they didn't. Nobody caught it from me. My staff didn't catch it from me, and Ron didn't catch it. And I said to Ron, do you want me to sleep in the other room? And he said, no, I don't care. If I catch it, I catch it. He didn't care. I kick him out when he gets sick. He wouldn't do that to me. I said, if you want, I'll go sleep in the other room. He said, no, it's fine. And he didn't get sick. So as much as I was susceptible to this virus, he wasn't. So maybe he had it already at some point. Because he frequently has sinusitis and congestion and stuff. And he always thinks it's just his respiratory allergies. And I'm wondering if sometimes he has a cold and he doesn't realize it, but he gets really bad symptoms from pollen. So that's the next thing. The pollen is stupid right now. The pollen is ridiculously high. It's probably better today because we're getting some rain, but in general, the pollen has been through the roof and it's bothering everybody. It's giving people sinus congestion and it's giving people problems with their eyes. So I wanted to talk a bit about eyes today because I am one of the unlucky sufferers of Demodex. So Demodex, please don't be grossed out. But anyway, some of you have this. There's a thing called blepharitis, and blepharitis is where you get an inflammation of the eyelids, especially the eyelids, the rim of the eyelids, where your eyelashes grow from. And everybody has mites on their face. We all do. But in some people, if your immune system is a little off or if you're susceptible, the mites overgrow and they love to eat your skin cells and they love to eat the oil that's made in the meibomian glands of your eyes. And if they overgrow, you get gritty feeling, and your immune system tries to fight them, so you get inflammation. And so you get a gritty sensation, you get swollen eyelids, you might get blurry vision. And I've been I was diagnosed with Demodex a number of years ago, and I didn't ever do anything. I didn't do much with it. Well, when I got diagnosed in January, my optometrist prescribed me a new prescription drug for it. It had a very high copay, and I found out that tea tree oil is very good at killing Demodex. I don't know if it's as good. I mean, if you read what it says online, this new drug is better at killing it than tea tree oil is. But if you clean it, if you clean thoroughly, tea tree oil is what people usually use. And you can't use straight up tea tree oil. Obviously, it's very irritating to your eyes. I tried using a tea tree oil soap, but the concentration of tea tree oil in the soap was too high. But you can get wipes, and you can get foam and gel that contains a concentration of tea tree oil that's appropriate for the eyes and is not irritating at all. In fact, it's very refreshing. And I have wipes that have tea tree oil, aloe, and chamomile in them. And they're very soothing and lovely. They feel like when your eyes feel inflamed and gritty, if you put something cool on them, it feels very nice. So I'm experimenting with that. And the thing is, you have to be on top of cleaning your eyes and using it. You can't let up. You have to use the tea tree oil at least twice a day, and you have to do it for a long time. And so I haven't always been consistent with doing it twice a day, so I'm still symptomatic. The other thing that happens is you get die-off. And so like you get die-off if you stop eating sugar when you have a yeast infection. So don't worry about it. The die-off is something that you get, and because the mites kind of come out and they're dead. And so when they release their bodies and parts and eggs and whatever out of your eye secretions, that's irritating too. So the answer to that is you just have to keep cleaning your eyes. So the stuff that you get, you can get special, very, very soothing eye foam, eye gel, eye wipes, and they have tea tree oil in them, and they have 4-terpenol, which is an extract of tea tree oil, which is good at killing Demodex. And they're also moisturizing and soothing. But because you have all this debris that's coming out, if you're home, you want to keep, or if you're somewhere where you can do it, you want to keep washing your eyes. So I found that the soap that I was using with tea tree oil, and it was much too irritating. So I got the same brand of liquid soap, and I got it lavender scented. And the lavender doesn't bother my eyes like that. The lavender, in fact, is very soothing. So I'll use the tea tree oil wipes and spray a couple of times a day. And then as often as I feel like it, I'll use the lavender soap and wash my eyes and just wash the debris away. The other thing you can do is it's not necessarily going to kill the Demodex, although it might to some extent, which is get black tea bags. And so black tea in particular is high in tannins, and tannins are astringent. So you can dip I would recommend getting organic tea bags, dipping them in warm water, and then I'm not sure if it would be better for them to be warm or to be cold. I'm going to experiment. So I'm going to get a brand of my organic tea bags that is not my favorite to drink, because I have some great organic black tea that that's reserved for making iced tea and also making a nice cup of tea. But there's a couple brands that I can get that I'm not as excited about. So I'm going to get one of those, and I'm going to use those for my eyes. And I'd rather use organic, because if it's not organic, I don't want to put pesticides on my eyes. That makes no sense. So I'm going to try that and see if the tannins are soothing to my eyes and help pull some of the inflammation out. And the other thing you can get is Eyebrite tea bags. And Eyebrite is good for anything to do with the eyes. It has flavonoids and antioxidants in it that are soothing for eye health, and they're kind of an eye-specific herb. And you can get the tea bags, and you can put those on your eyes. And I'm going to see if I have any in the house, and if I don't, I might grab a box of those as well. And so the other thing you can do is you can see if your optometrist, and mine does, and I may inquire about this. You can get a treatment for your eyes. They have a device called a Blefex, and they will do a deep clean on your eyes. And they have this device that cleans your eyes, cleans your eyelashes, gets some of the inflammation out, and it's very soothing, and it's a quick procedure. So I'm going to find out whether it's covered by insurance and what it costs and like that. And I know they're going to yell at me and say to me, why didn't you get the drug that we prescribed for you? And I'm like, well, number one, it was very weird. It's a specialty drug. My insurance, I don't know that it was real keen on prescribing it because it took a long time. I was waiting for them to approve it. And then I got calls from the specialty health department of my drugstore. And they said, we just want you to know that your copay is blah, blah. And blah, blah was a lot. And way more than I have spent on products, the tea tree oil products, altogether. Because I've bought, you know, probably, let's see, 3 tea tree oil products, and they were less than half of the copay and last way, way longer. However, you get, supposedly the prescription works very well. So if I get to a point where I just can't do it with the tea tree oil, I will get the prescription, unfortunately, because using the prescription is an eye drop. And when I had the iridotomy, they gave me prednisolone eye drops to use for a week. And all you do is drop the eye drop in your eye twice a day. And that's very easy to do. It's very easy compliance. And the only side effect is you might feel a small amount of burning for a second, which is what happens with the prednisolone. No big deal at all. And they're very well tolerated. So I might, if I can't get to this with tea tree oil, I am probably going to take the prescription. And even after you get the prescription, you only use the prescription for 6 weeks. And once the bottle's done, they don't insist that you get more. You're expected to still clean your eyes with tea tree oil as a preventative. So I'm still going to have to do all the things. So meanwhile, in the beginning, I'm going to try these other things. And I'm looking forward to getting the tea bags because that's going to be very soothing. The other thing you can try is cucumber, because cucumbers pull inflammation from your eyes as well. So tea tree, eye bright, tea bag, organic black tea. And then the other thing you can get that you can use to help your eyes feel better is hypochlorous acid. So hypochlorous acid is made by your tears. And so I'm going to get some of that too, that you can use it. First you do the tea tree oil, and then you put the hypochlorous acid in your eyes, and it just aids your, it aids cleansing and keeping your eyes clean. So I'm going to get that as well. So we'll report to you on how the Demodex goes. And if you have gritty, puffy eyes all the time, get your optometrist or ophthalmologist to take a look at your eyes and tell you if you have Demodex. And if you do, you don't have to suffer with this. And the thing is, there's two things that make you more likely to get Demodex. One is you have a predisposition. Not everybody overgrows Demodex. And two, as you get older, well, and there's three, and one, that's that you're immunocompromised. I can't believe that I'm immunocompromised, because as much as it took me a week to get over this cold, I definitely did get over it. And I'm not catching things all the time. And I'm taking a lot of things that help my immune system. So, I think that the Demodex likes me, because years ago, probably 5 years ago or more, I was told I had Demodex by an ophthalmologist, and he was just like, use baby shampoo. And that's another thing you can do. You just use gentle soap to clean your eyelids every day. So I have the gentle soap. I have the tea tree oil stuff. Anyway, so good luck with that if that's happening for you. The other thing to be aware of, now Ron suggested this to me, the pollen is so intense that people without allergies are probably being bothered by the pollen, and that is something that can happen. You can inhale or get pollen granules in your eyes, and they can bother you even if you don't have treat pollen allergies. It's simply mechanical. If you get enough powder in your nose, you're going to sneeze and have irritation. If you breathe in enough particulate matter, your asthma can flare and you're going to get a cough. And if you get enough pollen dust in your eyes, then you're going to get itching, burning eyes. And it doesn't matter if you're allergic to them or not. If you get anything in your eyes like that, you're going to have itching and burning. My concern is that, that if you have pollen in your eyes and it's bothering you, as soon as you clean it out, you're going to feel a lot better. Mine just isn't working like that. It's being kind of stubborn. And I didn't notice this sensation in my eyes as bad until I started treating it. And I'm wondering how much of this is actually die-off that I'm getting. So that's kind of interesting. So the other thing was this cold that I got, like I said, that there's this new compound, Proumel, and you can get that in various capsules and gummies and liquids. And so if you use that in advance of going somewhere, you might be less likely to get sick. And I'm gonna have the gummies on hand and take those. I'm going to start taking them regularly before I travel and while I'm traveling and after I travel. So if that's a wonderful preventative, then I'm excited about it. And it's just propolis. Like I said, you might be able to use just straight up propolis, and you can get a lot of products that have just propolis in them. All right, so more stuff about icky skin things. I wanted to review toenail fungus, because that's something that happens to a lot of my patients. And my patients are like, what do I do about my toenails? Toenails are notoriously hard to treat. And the reason they're notoriously hard to treat, so how do you get toenail fungus? Why doesn't everybody get it? Again, there are people who are genetically predisposed to it, because I have it and Ron doesn't. Thanks, Dad, because my dad used to go to the podiatrist and get his toenails taken care of. But some people are just predisposed to it and some aren't. You can share a shower, and if you're predisposed to it, you can pick it up. And if you're not predisposed to it, you won't. And it doesn't mean that you're unclean, because you can clean all you want if you're predisposed to toenail fungus, you're going to get it. And one of the reasons you get it, again, you're predisposed to it, but the thing is, fungus loves warm, dark, damp, moist environments. So if you wear shoes and socks, I am a foot sweater. That's another issue. I'm a foot sweater. When my feet are in socks and shoes, they generally sweat no matter how cold it is. So my feet hang out damp. So that's part of the problem. And so if I lived in Florida all year round and never wore socks and always wore sandals and went to the beach a lot, it would probably clear up, because going in ocean water, in mineral water, is one of the ways that you can prevent it and treat it. And I actually saw one of the Middle Eastern ladies at the water's edge, and she grabbed some wet sand and she was exfoliating herself. She was rubbing the wet sand on her skin, which is something you can do at the beach. And sometimes I'll do that. I'll sit down at the water's edge, I'll grab the wet sand, and I'll exfoliate my feet. And I prefer to do my feet. I'm not sure I necessarily need to do other parts of me. But your feet are a nice thing to do when you're there. So treating toenail fungus is not easy. And there's not, and if you're going to treat it, whatever you do, it has to be consistent and for a long time. So that's why people often elect to take the pharmaceutical meds. And so you get, the pharmaceutical meds, it's the brand name is Lamisil. I think it's Tolnaftate, it's one of them. But there are definitely home remedies. You just have to be super consistent when you use them. So here's a bunch of remedies for your toenail fungus. One of them is using an aromatic chest rub, and you can get the main brand that we all know about. The only thing that main brand is that it contains petroleum jelly. And if you're concerned about using petroleum jelly, you may not want to use that one. You can absolutely get all natural brands that are gooey like that, but don't contain petroleum jelly. They contain petroleum-like substances that are all natural, and they're not petroleum-based. And so it's usually you put it on your chest and you breathe in the essential oils, and it helps you helps to open up your lungs. But there's actually a study that found that the famous brand directly, they studied that brand and found that it improved toenail fungus in many cases. And some people, if they use it regularly, it helps to clear it up. And it's simple. It's affordable. You just have to do it. You have to keep doing it. So you just apply it daily. So if you can make it part of your nighttime routine, you can throw it on and off you go. Or you can put it, if you're wearing socks that day, you can put it on your toes. The only thing is you're going to smell like the essential oils. But if you put it on overnight, and then if you're concerned about getting it on your sheets, then you might want to wear socks to bed, which is not ideal because you want it to be open to the air. It's probably the best thing to do is to put it on before you put your socks on. Snake root, and it's antifungal, and the snake root they're talking, a lot of things can get called snake root, but this specifically is Argyrotina pincentius, and it's in the Asteraceae family, the sunflower family. And it's antifungal, and that's something you can use topically as well. Good old tea tree oil. Tea tree oil is a wonderful antifungal and antiseptic, and there are small-scale clinical studies that show that can be effective against toenail fungus. And you can use straight-up tea tree oil. The only thing is, some people, when they put straight-up tea tree oil on their skin, they are sensitive to it and they get inflammation and irritation. So you want to patch test your skin before you, if you're going to try using tea tree oil topically, you want to do a patch test and see if your skin blows up and you get red inflammatory spots. If you do, you're not going to be able to do that. Oregano oil is a great antifungal and you can use it topically. And it can improve your toenail fungus and your nail appearance, and it's safe. And it's a great natural option. And if you're sensitive to tea tree oil, oregano oil is a good option. Oregano oil will kill pretty much anything. So you can apply it to the affected area. Once again, it's an essential oil. It's an oil. So you want to do a patch test and make sure that you don't get inflammation from it. And if you don't, then off you go and you put it on once a day. Then you can get ozonized oils. And so you get, they can be olive oil or sunflower oil, and they get injected with ozone gas, and ozone exposure for a short time can activate a lot of organisms. So if you can find ozonized oils, that's something you can use as well. You can use conventional brands of mouthwash. There's a famous conventional brand that has menthol and thymol and eucalyptus. So whatever you use for a mouthwash, find one that has menthol, thymol, and or eucalyptus, and they're antifungal and antibacterial, and it's a popular remedy for toenail fungus. So you have to soak your toes in this compound for half an hour a day, and that'll work for a while. All the things that kill fungus seem to be smelly. They smell like essential oils. The next one doesn't smell like essential oils. It smells like garlic, because it is. And that you can use garlic extract, and you can put chopped or crushed garlic cloves on your toes. You're going to smell like a salad, but what are you going to do? And the next thing will also make you smell like a salad. You can also, if you want to, you can also take garlic, and if you want to take deodorized garlic, that's something you can take too. Garlic is a non-starter for me because I'm one of those unlucky people that gets a stomach ache from garlic. So, oh well. Then you will also smell like a salad if you use apple cider vinegar. And there was a study that showed that it can stop or slow growth of a bunch of different microbes, that it's generally antimicrobial. And there's not great clinical evidence, but it is something. When I tell people to make a bath, a foot bath, to help treat their toenail fungus, I do have them put apple cider vinegar in. Probiotics can help prevent the growth of various fungi. So, and that you would do internally. I do wonder what would happen if you included, so if you did a foot bath, if you included yogurt in the foot bath so that you got probiotics onto those toes. And then there's other remedies that might be helpful. And one is spirulina. And spirulina, I take spirulina every day. So I don't know if you put it on topically, if it might help you. Spruce tree resin, I don't know where you find that. I haven't seen that. And then, of course, propolis. We talked about propolis already. And if you just can't deal, and if it's too much to try all of these things, and or whatever you're doing isn't working, then you should go to the doctor. If you have diabetes, having toenail fungus is really not a good thing. That if you have diabetes, you need to go to see a podiatrist regularly because you need foot care. You got to make sure you're not going to get a diabetic foot ulcer. And if you have toenail fungus, that's more likely to happen. And you're more likely to get toenail fungus if you have diabetes because you have extra sugar in your blood that the bacteria or the fungi are just going to love to eat. So hydrogen peroxide. And it's the nail fungus, the Global Nail Fungus Organization does recommend it, but it's not really effective. Lamisil was, I'm not sure what I said it was, tolnaftate. It's not tolnaftate, it's terbinafine. So terbinafine is one of the oral drugs that you can take, and it works. It's just that you have to get your liver enzymes checked regularly because it can be harmful to your liver. And they do have side effects, and you can also use fluconazole, which is an antifungal. And these things definitely can cause side effects and liver damage. So if you want to do it quickly, though, that will work. Home remedies can definitely be helpful for moderate toenail fungus. They're easy to use. I will just say that you have to be consistent. You have to treat it every day. Yeah, and it's hard for the treatments to penetrate. It takes time. And so you're looking at 6 months of treatment, although there are some things you can buy that have, so you can get salicylic acid treatments that are over the counter at the drugstore. And they will help to improve the appearance of your nails over time. Obviously, keeping them dry and clean is what you want to do. Keeping them dry is hard if you're wearing shoes and socks. But you know, keeping them clean is not my problem because, you know, I was watching the Today Show once and Hoda was talking to, Jenna. Hoda and Jenna were chatting about whether you need to actually scrub your toes in the shower or does the soap just get onto your toes and you don't have to worry about it. And Hoda was of the opinion that you just let the soap do its thing and you don't have to scrub them. And Jenna disagreed. I disagree with Hoda, but then look at my situation. So I definitely will stand in the shower and bend my knees and use the washcloth with soap on my toes. That is when I should probably use tea tree oil soap. So it's possible to clear up. It may take some time and effort. And so that's how you might help it. All right, so let's see if there's anything more in this article about nail fungus. It develops in or under the nail, and it thrives in warm, moist environments. And the same fungus can cause jock itch, athlete's foot, and ringworm. And they're already present on your body. And if you come in contact with someone else who has a fungal infection, you can contract it. And as I said, and the other thing is, if you get manicures or pedicures at the nail salon, you can pick up fungus there too, if they're depending on the hygiene at those places. So that's a concern as well. It's more of a concern if, as I said, if you have diabetes or another disease that causes poor circulation, if you're over 65, nope, 2.5 years for that. If you swim in a public swimming pool, which I used to do, and I probably picked it up worse there. If your nail is injured or your skin is injured around your nail, if your toes are moist, again, the sweat is not a good thing. If your immune system is weakened or if you wear closed-toed shoes, everybody in New England wears closed-toed shoes when it's cold out. That's just what you, there's just, you can't win. So you're going to do much better if you move to Florida or somewhere where it's warm, where you don't have to wear closed-toed shoes all the time. So common signs of the infection are a distorted nail that can lift from the nail bed, and there it can be odorous and it can be brittle and thickened and yellowed. There's different kinds of nail funguses. Who knew that? There's a distal subungual infection that's the most common type, and it can develop in both fingernails and toenails, and the outer edge of the nail will have a jagged appearance with wider yellow streaks across the nail, and it invades the nail bed and the underside of the nail, which is part of why it's so hard to treat. A superficial infection just infects toenails and it attacks the top layers of the nails and creates well-defined white spots, and the white spots may uncover the entire nail, which can become rough, soft, and prone to crumbling, and the spots on the nail can become pitted and flaky. And then a proximal subungual infection that's uncommon, and that can affect fingernails and toenails, and you get yellow spots at the base of the nail as the infection spreads upward. I don't think that's what I have. I think I have the first one. And then you can get candida, which is a yeast, and it can invade nails previously damaged by another infection, and it can affect your fingernails too. And that often happens with people who get their hands into water a lot. So people who wash dishes, that's going to affect them more often, like people who wash dishes for a living. Not if you wash your dishes once a day, you're probably going to be okay. And they start around the cuticle, which becomes swollen and red and tender, and you may have partial nail lifting. So you'll know that you have it because other infections can mimic a nail fungus. So a doctor can take a scraping and look at it under a microscope and tell you for sure it's a fungal infection. And so if you we talked about all the natural treatments for toenail fungus, but when you go to the physician, they're going to offer you terbinafine, itraconazole, fluconazole, or griseofulvin, which are all antifungal treatments that you take orally. And they work, but again, you have to get your liver enzymes checked periodically. And you usually have to use the medication for like 3 to 6 months. And topical solutions are not so effective. So some lifestyle choices can help. Washing your hands after touching infected nails, of course. Drying your feet well after showering, especially between your toes. Getting manicures and pedicures from trustworthy salons. Avoid being barefoot in public areas, and reducing your use of artificial nails and nail polish. So, you know, who wants to do that in the summer? You can get antifungal nail polish. That is a thing, and you can put that on your toenails, and that can be helpful. So that is something that you can get. So you'll know that you have a fungal infection if your nails are brittle, discolored, or unusually thick. They can turn white or yellow, and the nail may loosen or lift off the surrounding skin, and you can have swelling in the skin as well. And the fastest way to get rid of it is take one of those drugs, unfortunately. If you leave it untreated, it probably won't resolve, and it'll stay in the same place on the nail or could spread and worsen. So for some people, a fungal infection can be difficult to cure, and the first round of medication might not even work. So the nail infection can't be considered cured until a new nail that's free from infection grows in. And it's possible for it to return, especially if you're predisposed to it. I'm moving to Florida, that's it. So complications is you can get a resurgence, permanent loss of the nail, discoloration, the spread of infection to other areas of the body and maybe the bloodstream and cellulitis. And that's going to happen. I mean, that has never happened to me. But if you're immune compromised or if you have diabetes, that's something to be concerned about. So if you're immune compromised or have diabetes, I would get this treated by an MD and find out what the best way to do it would be. The bath that I like to recommend, a simple bath would be apple cider vinegar, equal parts. So if you can manage it, 1/4 cup of each of the following: apple cider vinegar, witch hazel, Epsom salts, well, not 1/4 cup of tea tree oil. Tea tree oil I put in 10 to 20 drops in warm water and stir it around, and have your feet in the warm water for at least 20 minutes. And do that as often as you can. If you can do it every day, you're going to get better faster. I think it's a good idea to use some of the intimate, if you don't want to, you know, take the drugs, is to use the essential oils and be very consistent with them, using the aromatic chest rub, because that's so easy to use and it's easy to obtain, and you don't have to put a lot on, and you just have to be consistent and use it. You can also get nail patches that have medication in them, and they could be over-the-counter pharmaceuticals, or they can be essential oils, and you put the patches on your toenails and you leave them on overnight, and they'll help to get rid of your fungus, and they may or may not work. So all right, so we have a few more minutes left. Let's get started on something else. So did you know that surgery may worsen knee pain? So I may not want to get surgery. I'm trying not to get surgery on my knee. I have bone on bone. My femurs are touching my patellas. I have no cartilage between my femurs and patellas on both legs. And my orthopedist said, you may need a patella replacement at some point. But he was fine with having, I don't feel like I have enough pain to do that at this point. And my right knee is worse than my left. We don't know if the right knee is carrying around this lame left leg with the femoral neuralgia. Getting old is just great. But anyway, I had the PRP injection. The PRP injection plus getting exercise plus, you know, being in warm salt water and applying DMSO, plus taking glucosamine. I think all of those things are helping me because my knee is consistently a lot better than it was a year ago. Knock on wood. So, but if you get surgery, the knee pain can get worse. So here's what this article says. So recent evidence suggests that a commonly practiced form of surgery for knee arthritis may worsen it. And that can be because the initial damage to the meniscus, which the surgery addresses, is not the only cause of pain and discomfort in knee arthritis. Now, my understanding is I don't have a torn meniscus or that my soft tissue is pretty much intact. I just don't have cartilage. That's the issue. So I wouldn't be getting a meniscus repair because... Now, my understanding is also as you get older, your meniscus is probably torn. And just because you have a torn meniscus doesn't mean that you need to get it repaired or that it has to be treated with surgery. So people who received sham surgery had less knee pain in one study. They had increased use of the knee and experienced less later osteoarthritis than those who had removal of their meniscus. The meniscus is a piece of tough C-shaped rubbery cartilage in the knee that provides shock absorption between your shin and thigh bone and can tear as the result of a sudden twist. More often, tears occur with age and commonly go hand in hand with osteoarthritis. Many older people with osteoarthritis have meniscus tears, and most older people with meniscus tears have arthritis. So they usually thought that the meniscus tears were the source of the pain, but there's a Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, orthopedic surgeon and sports medicine specialist Clint Sopp, who was not involved in the recent research. He said that he remembered 20 years ago and 15 years ago hearing doctors like mentors say, oh, well, you know, it's not arthritic pain, it's meniscus pain. The problem is you can't tell. So there's now a substantial body of evidence suggesting that we may have been targeting the wrong problem. The meniscal tear is often a visible finding, but it's not the sole cause of pain. In middle-aged and older individuals, meniscal tears are extremely common, including people with no symptoms. That makes it unlikely that the tear itself is the main driver of pain. Widely used treatments persist despite limited evidence. So Dr. Paul Arciero from the Health and Human Physiological Sciences Department at Skidmore, who is not involved in recent research, said that anecdotally, most individuals, both active and sedentary, who have undergone arthroscopic partial meniscectomy, report worsening of their pain and mobility over time. So all these different cell mediators that we didn't know much about, like interleukin inhibitors, cytokines, enzymes, TNF-alpha, metalloprotein, all of these things are associated with pain and probably associated with meniscus-type pain. One of the most important measures is giving knee pain time. During the waiting period, so cycling a lot of times is helpful, riding your bikes, as well as injection treatments such as cortisone, hyaluronic acid, and PRP. And I elected to go with the PRP, and I really think the PRP helped me to the point where if I'm not quite sure my knee is quite right, I might go and get another one. You also suggested that for some, osteoarthritis may be sufficiently advanced that the full knee replacement is more sensible than the meniscectomy. I'm going to try not to go there if I can, because that's a lot of downtime. And I don't think I'm in bad enough shape to get a knee replacement at this point. And I'm managing it with exercise and glucosamine and anti-inflammatory supplements and the PRP shot. So the acute traumatic injury, then you have to do appropriate surgery. And a lot of times, routine meniscus tears and pain, the evidence shows alternative treatments are more effective than long-term. And sham surgery worked. So getting sham surgery, maybe you shouldn't do that. But when you do a diagnostic arthroscopy, where you inject saline into the knee, slightly inflating to look for visibility, they flush the knee with fluid, which is called lavage of the joint. It's not actually sham surgery because you're clearing out, if you're putting the saline in, you're clearing out the inflammatory molecules. So you're removing the cell mediators. And so some people, some practitioners, when they go to do PRP, before they do the PRP, they lavage the knee and do that. I went to a doctor who does that first. The doctor that I went to does not. And I got that procedure covered by insurance, but the doctor that didn't cover insurance, they do this whole thing, and that's part of what they do. They lavage the knee. So that's interesting. So I probably can hold off on getting knee surgery. That's what I'm hoping. And my neurosurgeon definitely thinks that I should hold off on more back surgery. So we're not going to do surgery for a while. We're going to do natural medicine. We're going to do good supplements, good diet, good exercise, physical therapy, both exercises and hands-on, chiropractic, acupuncture. I had acupuncture last night. Thank you, Nicole. And that's what we're going to do. All right. So I think it's time for me to go. Also, we have some rain going on and the lights just flashed. So I'm nervous that I'm going to lose power. So let me get off so I get the whole show. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Sturch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Sturch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening.